Welcome to the Sum of It All podcast with season 10.
Wow.
I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague, Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education. And we're excited to launch season 10 with you. This season, we're diving into the book, Street Data by Shane Safir and Jamila Dugan. Just as in our previous episodes, in our previous seasons, Mark and I will chat about one chapter of the book in each episode and invite you to listen in as you read along with us. Whether you've read it already or plan to read it soon, we're so glad you've joined us for this episode where we're going to explore the foreword and prologue. Transcripts to our podcasts are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. So Mark, I'm curious, why this book? Why now? Can we start with how we heard about the book?
Yeah, that's a great place to start, Audrey. You know, I think that as I follow lots of people on education Twitter, definitely started to notice it trending there and was very curious about it, especially thinking about how that might fit into our mathematics equity work. And then there started being, I started hearing some buzz among colleagues of ours at the San Diego County Office of Education, and just got more and more curious about the book.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I don't know. I'm sure if you're listening and you're like us, you have like a stack of books that you want to read, and they all are important to read, but there's a stack, right? And Street Data was in my stack for quite some time, and people just kept saying to me, you've got to bump this up. This needs to be the next book. And somehow I got to like a critical mass where it was like, okay, this needs to be the next book we read. And to be honest, like, I was intrigued when I read the, you know, the snippets on the website originally, which caused me to have the book in my stack to begin with. But data books are not the thing that get me excited to read. That's just not on my list. Like, there's all kinds of books that are on my list of like loves, but everyone has their types, right? And I think I might've passed over it a few times because, as we've talked about in other episodes, I think a lot of our practices around how we look at data promotes deficit views of students. And so like, I'm just a little wary often to enter data conversations because I've been there, done that, and they haven't gotten me anywhere.
Yeah, great point, Audrey. Same with me. I don't feel like we sort of stay within the same system around the data piece. And I'll add on to that. Sometimes assessment books for me, just stay really theoretical and not grounded specifically around practical change in teaching and learning mathematics, because of course mathematics is what you and I support primarily.
Yeah, which is another great point. So while we welcome all who would like to listen in and be a part of this asynchronous book club with us, this group was designed for math leaders, and specifically math leaders in our local context, right? That's who our target audience has always been. And so we like to try to balance between things we might call more mathy reads and things that kind of live outside of the world of math that we have to draw some lines in to connect it into math teaching and learning. And so, you know, we've done a couple of other seasons that were not necessarily math books, our books out of the world of math education. And so making sure we have that balance, but I'm excited to dive into this. It seems to be an amazing text, and it's already living up to all of the hype that I've heard from folks. So maybe start us off, Mark, what so far in maybe the prologue and forward has got your attention already?
Well, already just this idea of changing the system, you know, we've talked about that. It almost becomes a catchphrase in its own, like interrupt the system, right? But the real interruption we keep talking about, it seems to keep going back to assessment. It seems like all roads keep leading back to assessment, right? Like this whole intervention conversation that's going on now and remediation, it's like, well, wait a second, how are we deciding that students need remediation? What is our practice around assessing that? So it seems like a lot of roads are going back to assessment. So it seems like that's, if we're really going to dismantle a system and build it with equity in mind, I think we need to go back and examine it. So that's definitely one thing that, you know, is on my mind. And this other thing is sort of this transition from pandemic lockdown to more in-person learning. You know, for a while there, during the pandemic, there was a lot of buzz around revisiting the old normal and creating a new normal. And I have to confess, Audrey, I got pretty wrapped up in that and pretty fired up about that. Mm-hmm. Like thinking like, we're going to come out of this lockdown situation and we're going to really reboot things and really eliminate some of the inequities in our system. But I feel like the cry like to dismantle racism within our system and the things that we've inherited, I just seen that noise seems to have quieted a bit. Mm. And the louder cry of our students are behind is louder. So I worry that reducing of one cry and elevating another cry is just leading to actually even a stronger deficit view of our most vulnerable students than even before the pandemic.
Hmm. Yeah, that hits me, Mark. To think about where we were, a year and a half, 2 years ago when we started this podcast and mm-hmm. to now what we thought was going to happen as an outcome of things having to shift and looking up and saying maybe they haven't and maybe instead we're holding on even more tightly to the old system is a super interesting point. Mm-hmm. As we look at any book to talk about, is it a podcast book or not? There's not a lot of criteria we have. Mostly sure. We're doing this for our learning and for the learning of others, right? That it right. pushes us to read and consider things. It grows our brain. It helps us continue to push on ideas and grow. But in this particular case, as we were starting to think about whether or not there should be a podcast, Shane Safir and Alcine Mumbi put out a podcast called Street Data. And so I just want to start with it is an amazing, very thoughtfully put together podcast that I enjoy listening to immensely. And so we paused and we're like, I think they already have a podcast. We do not need to, we're never going to do it better. And we're not attempting to here. I think what we're going to try to do is something very different, which is in the style of what we've talked about already is we want to make sure that we are really thinking about the lens of math teaching and learning and how this book informs what we need to change, what we need to think about, what we need to consider. So what about you? What were you thinking about in terms of this being a podcast?
Well, Audrey, one of the things that we do when we're thinking of choosing a book, we just read a little bit of the foreword and the prologue, just without getting too far into it, but mm-hmm. just to kind of get a sense of how we see this as a possible season in our podcast. And I read the foreword by Christopher Emden and the prologue, and I just ran into some pieces that seem pretty important to address specifically within teaching and learning mathematics. So for example, in the foreword by Christopher Emden, I'm gonna read a quote and it goes like this: "Beyond the rigors of the subject matter that lead to what many term as underperformance, it may not be that the academic content is too rigorous. It may mean that the manner of delivery is too simplistic and therefore disengaging." Boy, I just thought this quote was fantastic. I think that just this deficit view of just assuming that our students need more help and we need to swoop in and rescue students, rather than saying like, wait a second, we're not even respecting the fact that they have in their tools and what they're showing up with, they can handle complexity. In fact, we're disengaging them by giving them simplicity. Words come to my mind like demeaning, disrespectful. And how, that's what's coming at me, how does that engage me as a learner when that is happening? One phrase that you've probably heard me use before, Audrey, is the phrase, past performance should not be used as a predictor of future success. And I'm pretty happy with that phrase, but actually I'm kind of thinking of it again a little bit here too. And this is why. I'm excited about this book pushing my definition of even past performance. Because if our method of measuring past learning is already skewed and not accurate, then we really need to rethink our current state of teaching and learning mathematics, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that rethink on that, Mark. When you read that quote, which I also highlighted and starred in the foreword, I immediately remembered an instance of being in a class and being next to a student who had a worksheet and had his head down on the desk, and we were allowed to interact with students. And so I walked over and I said, hey man, what's going on? And he he like raised his head slightly and looked at me and he said, the same stuff, he used a different choice word, that they've asked me to do every year. This is the same stuff. Like his head was down, not because it was too difficult, but it was completely and utterly disengaging, demeaning, and disrespectful. Like those words you pulled out, Mark, like it was not at all honoring his ability to think and reason and communicate. It was just this repetitive nonsense and that he authentically was choosing not to engage in. And I couldn't fault him. Like, how dare we put that in front of this person and assume that he should lower himself into doing these menial tasks when he is worth so more? Like, it caused emotional turmoil for me. I felt the pain of this child sitting there year after year, recognizing you didn't even choose a different worksheet. It's the same thing you put in front of me before. And so I think when we think about this idea of street data, and I think what, you know, Christopher Emden is proposing here is that we really have to rethink what it is that's going on in our classrooms, and we have to take a new look at it. You know, he defines or starts to define street data, and I'm excited to get into it because it's still a little bit in the theoretical space for me, and I'm really trying to learn, but they're, you know, this is different, right? They talk about street data is about operating with a belief in the infinite potential of those who've been told they are less than, and radical honesty about the deep flaws in the system as it currently stands. Like, that's what the street data is about. It's about looking at this child and saying, whew, you have infinite potential. You've been told you don't. And our system is designed flawed in order to keep you in that space. So they talk about street data as a radical new beginning, that it's a space to detach from a broken model and embark on building a new one. Like the forward ends there, and I am like literally on the seat, the edge of my seat, like, tell me how to do this, because this asset-based lens that offers insight into this, I need to know more.
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. I think that makes perfect sense.
So let's do as we promised. Can we make some connections, even in this initial toe dip in the water of street data, between math and what we're reading, so that we offer some of the explicit differences compared to the podcast that I talked about that Shane and Austin have going that is fantastic, but lives in the land of street data and amongst all of schools and school data?
Oh yeah, for sure, Audrey. Excited to jump into the mathematics space with this. And I know we have a little bit of a bias because we work primarily in mathematics, but I'm just going to go ahead and say anyway that I think mathematics teaching and learning is like some of the most urgent educational lens to embrace this book. I think the traditional trajectory of mathematics has been so broken around assessment and data and so forth. Our method of standardized testing, for example, continues to push us to focus on comparisons between white and Asian students against indigenous Black and Latinx student performance. We're put in that position year after year to do that. We took off a couple of years of doing that, and now we're jumping right back in, right? And as I know I've talked about this in previous episodes, but I think it's worth repeating that this idea of gap gazing, and Dr. Rochelle Gutierrez in the math research space calls this idea of looking at that so-called gap, she calls it and refers to it as gap gazing. And then if we have deficit views of Indigenous, Black, and Latinx students, those gaps can by gazing at those gaps, that can reinforce our deficit views that we might carry. And especially as we get into this narrative, we need to narrow the gap. A lot of that can really impact us consciously and subconsciously. And what's the response in schools, right? It's the assumption of this linear understanding of mathematics. Mathematics is a ladder. You need to go back to your first gap versus a web, pushes us to remediate students on previous skills to catch them up, robbing them of access to grade level material, and in many cases, pushing our most vulnerable students even further behind. So I think this idea of street data, I'm very excited to see how that can push on this very broken system we have in mathematics, especially around assessment, and especially around the decisions we make around these assessments of how we are supposedly supporting students that we are labeling as behind.
Those are such great points, Mark. You know, I'm excited as I got to the end of the prologue. The author has 5 bullet points, and every single one of them, I think, ties into this idea of math teaching and learning that you and I have been talking about over our past seasons, that is a bit of the space where we dream and lean into. And so, like, the idea that there are many ways of knowing and succeeding beyond the ways that dominate. And in the book, they talk about the American and much of Western education. And I would add, and in mathematics classes, right? Like, where is our limited view of, like, can we identify that and broaden it and think about what it means to know and succeed and do mathematics? So super interested in having that as we head into the book. Another one is that learning does not require a school building or even a classroom. And you and I have talked a lot in the last year or two about where the other spaces our students engage in math, and how do we honor that and build upon that brilliance and those experiences in our classrooms. Equity work is first and foremost pedagogical. Like, this idea of a student voice, I know that's been a theme we've talked about. Where's the student voice in mathematics? How is the mathematics belonging to them and it's not our mathematics? Student agency is the goal, not test scores. I'm excited to dive into that. Like, test scores and math is a huge point of area for growth. I'll leave it there for now. And the data is everywhere. It's everywhere. And when we talk about that, you know, I'm excited to think about, where's the data in the math class? You know, where is it that we can see it beyond the math classroom? Where is it we see it in the worlds of our students and in the interactions we have in family and community? So I am seeing each one of those. I'm excited that's where they said we are headed. And, you know, I was very careful and purposeful of not reading ahead, even though I really wanted to into chapter 1, but I'm excited about that. So before we close out this just introductory episode, is there something you're already taking away or already looking forward to in this book?
Yeah, for sure, Audrey. I would say how I try to distill it into one thing. I'm just excited to pursue ways for it. Let me back up for a second. We agree that our students are brilliant. So I'm eager to pursue ways for us to create spaces for the brilliance of our students to be obvious. Like, I'm excited about seeing what the data would look like and how we can leverage it to empower our students and to obviously empower our teachers as well, as they see that brilliance in their students, as we have our students continue to grow in their knowledge and their journey of how to learn. And I'm just going to finish my little piece here with a quote from the prologue. We need a new kind of dashboard.
I love that one. I love that one. Yeah. So at the end of the prologue, the authors ask these 2 questions. They say, what is the purpose of education anyway? And do we teach and lead to simply reproduce reality, or will we teach and lead to transform it? And they state that these are the questions they're going to unpack in the chapters ahead. And so, like I said, Mark, I stayed true to our word that this podcast is our thinking as we read the book in time. I did not read ahead to chapter 1, but I am so thankful we're wrapping up this episode right now so that I can dive into chapter 1 and read a little bit more. It is literally, I've been waiting to dive in further. So I'm super excited to read this book along with our listeners and with you.
Sounds great, Audrey. Me too. Thanks for joining us in this episode. In our next episode, we will chat about chapter 1, Leading for Equity, Another World is Possible. Until then, send us a tweet with the hashtag SumMathChat. That's hashtag SumMathChat with your questions and thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going there. Until then, best wishes on transforming education.